here with me now. Well, you're from the world of education, aren't you? So you can tell us first whether this has been taken for granted up until now. What have the previous studies said?
Most of the studies have suggested that black pupils, in comparison with their white counterparts in school, perform less well in a series of tests and in public examinations. What I've suggested in the article recently published is that most of these research activities have failed to take into account certain influences on pupils' performance. And the most obvious and crucial of these variables is social class. What you have, therefore, is a failure of educational researchers to compare like with like. They're so concerned with comparing performances between black and white pupils that they forget about the influence of class.
So the methods of their research are at fault here, you're saying?
Yeah, that's right.
And are you critical of the numbers involved?
Yeah, that's another thing which is often overlooked in some of the reviews and in the research which is carried out. Most of the assumptions that black pupils are underachieving are based on very, very small samples, and also, quite interestingly, based on samples which come from London. Now, what happens in London may or may not have any bearing on the performance of black pupils in other parts of the country.
Well, the thing is, Barry, why ask this question at all? Why have research into how black people do?
It's absolutely critical, because there is something known in educational research as the self-fulfilling prophecy, which basically means if you believe someone is going to perform at a particular level, that person will perform at that particular level in actuality. A lot of teachers believe that black pupils do less well academically than their white counterparts. If they go into the classroom believing that, the possibility is that black pupils will attain that level, that low level of performance which is expected of them.
You mean the teachers go in and they've already got a dim view of those pupils?
They've got a very stereotyped view of those pupils.
So they don't have to push them as far and don't have the same expectations.
That's right. And so the performance and potential of those pupils is highly damaged.
Do you think there are any other factors involved there, as well, apart from the teacher's view?
I think the teacher's view is absolutely critical, but of course the teacher's view reflects a view of black pupils held in society generally. The assumption, for instance, that they are better at whites than whites in sporting performances, mm-hmm. that they are better than whites when it comes to musical abilities, so on and so forth. And so there is evidence that black pupils are actually taken out of their academic classrooms and put into school teams and so on and so forth. And of course, once again, that has a deleterious effect on their performance academically.
And another factor that might come into this is the fact that when you go for a job, when you're white, I would think qualifications are very important. Sometimes a black skin colour can work against you, can't it?
Yeah, it's more than sometimes, actually. There's quite a lot of research which shows that the market value of, say, O and A levels are less worth to black pupils than they are to white pupils. And there's a lot of evidence to show that black unemployed youngsters tend to be much better qualified than white unemployed youngsters. And the evidence suggests that employers or potential employers discriminate quite openly against black people.
Well, if they have to be better qualified and it is more competitive, wouldn't that spur them on to work harder and do better at school?
That's one interpretation. The other interpretation is that it leads to demotivation, a lack of motivation, because they realise that if their skin colour rather than their academic qualifications are the major determinants of their life chances on getting a job, then why work hard at school?
Why bother to take part in it at all?
That's right.
Are you going to do any research, since you obviously don't have much faith in the research that's been done so far?
Yeah, some of the work that's going on at the Aston University unit where I work is looking into the performance of black pupils in an inner city school in the north of England, which is going to try and take into account a number of the variables which I've suggested are omitted from existing research.
Well, Barry, thank you for coming in this afternoon.
OK, pleasure.
And we're going to travel out and about now to LBC's radio car. And our reporter there is Helena. And Helena Kirkuc is in Notting Hill for that famous carnival. We're going to take a brief check on the events right now. Helena, how are things looking?
They're looking very good indeed. They're very loud indeed as well. I thought rather than letting me tell you about it, I've collared a group of young people here. And I'm going to ask them, what do you think so far? How's this year going?
It's really good fun. It's a lot of laughs.
I'm glad to see that everyone's having a really good time. It's a relaxed atmosphere, including our friends, the Boys in Blue.
What's your favourite bit of the carnival? I mean, there's so much here to do.
Just listening to all the sound systems going down the street. It's good. They sort of change every 30 yards or so. It's really good fun.
So is it for you two the music that's most important?
It's mainly the music, and it's just a carnival atmosphere. A chance to enjoy yourself for a couple of days without, you know, any hassle of anyone.
It's really not like being in West London at all, is it?
It isn't at the moment, no, I must admit, because the sun is shining, it's not raining.
What do you think of the number of people who've come down this year? What does it look like? I know you lot have been here before. Do you think there are as many people as usual?
Yeah, there's plenty of people here all the time. It's just a great laugh.
Right, thanks. Well, I hope that sort of set the scene. I'm going to be coming back to talk to you a bit later on. Within the next half hour, all the big carnival processions should start up. It's Children's Pageant Day today, so we've got a lot of very little people booging around the streets. It's really, really good fun, and it couldn't be nicer weather.
Now, I seem to remember last year you ended up getting doused in various powders and flour and things.
Well, yes, this is just it. I must admit, I've been down here for a couple of years now, and I'm quite prepared to have talcum powder thrown all over me. But, of course, because I'm prepared for it, it's not happened yet. But give me half an hour, and I expect it will.
We'll look forward to it. Helena, thanks very much indeed.
OK, speak to you later.
OK, that's Helena Kirkuch reporting from the Notting Hill Carnival. We'll be travelling back down there a little bit later on in the programme. This is Young London, the station LBC.
It's sale time at the Sofa Bed Factory. Buy now lovely sofa beds in beautiful plain and designer print fabrics at unbelievably low, low prices. For example, a full-size sleeper with interior sprung mattress and a whole range of fabrics at just £399. That's £150 off our normal price. At 11 Bulstrode Street, W1, Monday to Saturday, and 334 Caledonian Road, N1, Monday to Saturday, and Sundays 10 to 4 for viewing.
LBC News. The national dock strike has suffered a blow today, with dockers at Immingham on Humberside voting to defy their union strike call. It's the largest group of dockers so far to decide to continue working, and they're being joined by their colleagues in neighbouring Grimsby. An inquiry is to be held into yesterday's collision between the passenger ferry Olau Britannia and the French cargo boat off the Belgian coast. The French ship, the Mont Louis, sank after the collision. The ferry was virtually undamaged and this morning set sail for Holland from Sheerness in Kent. The parents of baby Holly Roffey have set up a trust fund to help finance similar operations for other children. Holly, the world's youngest heart transplant patient at the age of 10 days, died 18 days after the operation at London's Heart Hospital. The hot weather, heavy traffic and roadworks have combined to create a large number of long delays for motorists today. And the AA says traffic ground to a halt near the Spaghetti Junction on the M6. And for a third day running, there have been bottlenecks at the Dartford Tunnel linking Kent and Essex. The weather for this afternoon, a mostly sunny afternoon, the odd shower. Top temperature 25 degrees centigrade, 77 degrees Fahrenheit. And tonight, rather cloudy, the possibility of some thundery showers, but only a possibility. The minimum temperature a mild 16 degrees centigrade, 61 degrees Fahrenheit. And the outlook for tomorrow, the bank holiday, a cloudy start, but some sunny intervals and a chance of an afternoon shower or two.
In Sue Jameson's Arts Week tonight at 9, Eli Wallach and Anne Jackson talk about the effects of sex therapy on an audience. Arthur Miller is revived after nearly 30 years, and the author who is inspired by the supernatural. Francis King talks about his latest novel. Sue Jameson's Arts Week is tonight at 9 here on LBC.
And now the week's news from the Young London News Desk. Homeless young people are found living rough in London. There's a new plan for cycle safety. Why a dip in the Thames can lead to tragedy. And two pensioners get a taste of student life. Homeless young people in southeast London have been found sleeping rough on vast housing estates in Greenwich. The youth, some as young as 14, live in squats if they can, but constant evictions often force them into even worse accommodation. Many are runaways, but some have been left behind by their parents when they moved out of the area. The problem was uncovered by Christian youth worker Martin McGowan on a chance visit to the area. He spent days and nights on the estates trying to get to know the young people, and he was horrified by what he saw.
There have been young people sleeping rough in council estates, a girl of 16 sleeping in a concrete drain tube on a play park, a young man of about 19 sleeping in the chute cupboard or in the dustbin in a chute cupboard on a council estate, and many others.
The government has launched the country's first national cycle safety campaign. £1 million will be spent on the campaign. Posters on hoardings and the back of buses will remind motorists to look out for cyclists and urge cyclists to signal clearly. The Minister of State for Transport, Linda Chalker, says she's confident the campaign will help cut down on the number of road casualties.
6,000 people were seriously injured or were fatalities on our roads last year as a result of bikes in being involved in crashes. And I want to make sure that we reduce that figure, I believe, by making the motorists more conscious of the cyclists and the cyclists much more conscious of the motorist. We have a chance of reducing that figure and stopping this awful carnage.
A youth charity claims the government's Army Youth Training Scheme has flopped. The charity, YouthAid, says only a tenth of the 5,000 places have been filled and 4 out of 5 applicants are rejected. The government says trainees aren't willing to go through the same rigorous training as regular recruits, nor are they prepared to stick out the year's course. YouthAid claims young people have given the scheme the cold shoulder because they want real jobs, not temporary training places with no prospect of work at the end. If you've been taking advantage of the warm weather to go swimming in the Thames, bear in mind that the water may not be as safe for you as you think. Earlier this summer, the Royal Society for the Prevention of Accidents said that 250 people in Britain would die from drowning before the end of September. And now, as the warm weather continues, their predictions are sadly coming true. Ken Saunders, RoSPA's water safety advisor, says the Thames is a particularly hazardous spot to swim.
It's rather sad that the friendly old Father Thames, in fact, is just about the most profound drowning hazard in the country. And this has been proved, in fact, year after year. It is simply that people do not understand the nature of a river. It is in itself, of course, one very large current with all sorts of devious difficulties built into it.
When students in California and New York begin their new semester next month, they're in for a surprise. Every autumn they meet the British exchange students who'll be spending a year in the States. But this year there's a difference. Two of the British contingent are in their 70s. Ted Goodfriend and Bernard Lewis have been studying for honours degrees in humanities at Middlesex Polytechnic. But Ted says it's been an education in what young people are really like as well.
Young people particularly are quite deep thinkers. And they have a social conscience. Older people are inclined to have a jaundiced view of youngsters because, you see, as you get older, you become more stereotyped in your ideas. And a certain amount of prejudice undoubtedly creeps in when you see people who are differently made up with hairstyles or differently dressed to yourself, and you think, you know, my goodness, well, you know, what's happening here? But you realise that this is just a matter of fashion, of the moment, that basically they're marvellous people.
Well, no pensioners on the student report. We have some young students for you this afternoon. Carrie Rosen and Jimmy Sheppey are here with a look at what's been happening this week in the student world. And Carrie first with a spot of culture, the Edinburgh Festival.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago we spoke to students from Westfield College, Royal Holloway and the London University Drama Society who were all taking plays up to the Edinburgh Festival Fringe. Well, last weekend I went up to join them and see how they were getting on. Unfortunately, the quality wasn't very consistent, and although some of the performances were extremely professional, others didn't quite reach the standards I might have expected. Westfield College's Alcestes falls into the latter category. Although they described Euripides' play as a lunchtime cocktail of rumbustious humour, only a couple of performances made the performance worth watching. Royal Holloway's floorboard company gave a slightly unpolished but very creditable performance of Sheridan's The Duenna, which I enjoyed thoroughly, and the National Student Theatre at the Cathedral Hall put on several plays, including The Freshman by Michael Arditi, an excellent work concerning the rise and fall of a Cambridge University student, and it's especially meaningful to anyone in further education themselves. Staying with Cambridge students, their university was very well represented at the festival. The Cambridge Players performed a very simple but effective adaptation of A.A. Milne's Winnie the Pooh, which delighted young and old alike, although I felt that the story so far by the Cambridge Footlights in no way lived up to their reputation. There didn't seem to be a new Tim Brooke Taylor or John Cleese in that particular cast. So, between about the 10th of August and the 1st of September each year, Edinburgh is transformed into a massive 24-hour theatre. A warning, though. Unless you have about 2 weeks and at least £200, you won't be able to see anything like the amount you'd want to from the huge and varied programme that includes about 800 different shows. Although there are for most impoverished students the usual accommodation problems, the Caledonian capital is like one enormous party, so who really cares if there's nowhere to stay anyway?
Now then, if you're quick, here's some news on how to get to Edinburgh, or anywhere else for that matter, even cheaper.
Yes, good news for students from British Rail this week. If you buy your student rail card in September or October, you'll get a voucher entitling you to a free journey up to the value of £10 on top of regular 50% reductions. The Director of Passenger Marketing at British Rail, Ivor Warburton, says that apart from the usual reductions, the voucher offers students their first trip home at a greatly reduced price or even for nothing. So at least someone is helping students make their grant go further.
Now, I've no idea what this next story is about, but apparently if you've got £5 million to spare, you might find this next item interesting.
That's right. You remember we reported the sale of Bedford College's site last week. However, the Holme, which is part of Bedford's estate and one of the most important Regency houses in London and home to several lecture theatres, is still needing a buyer. It's for sale as a private residence at a cool £5 million following Bedford's departure for Royal Holloway's site in Egham. So if 2,500 students fancy a flat with a difference, either price, you might consider approaching your bank managers.
Yes, or enter certain newspaper games at the moment and win five times. And for students of politics, our final story is about a model of government with a difference.
Yes, students who have problems with faceless bureaucracies can take heart because Johannes Viertel, an electronic student from Munich, is leading the fight back with his newly invented ministerium. It's designed to take sheets of paper, stamp them several times, and then screw them up and throw them in the bin. His machine is a model of government operations in West Germany. It's built of mahogany and bronze and stainless steel, and it does absolutely nothing useful whatsoever. But by all accounts, it looks spectacular.
Now, we were talking earlier on about old students, mature students, as they're called. What's been your experience of that? Do you have old students at your college?
Mm-hmm. On my course, they're out of about 30. There are about five over 30 themselves. Mm-hmm. And I found that when I joined the college, there were two of us who'd come straight from school, which threw away all my preconceived ideas that every student's 18 years old and graduates when they're 21, because none of them are.
Really?
They're all 21 or 22, yeah.
And what, they take time off in between times?
Yes, a couple of them work for a year or so, or some of them have been on other courses first.
So is that a healthy mix, then, having people in their 30s, people in their 20s, and a few who go straight in from school?
Well, I think that the people who go straight in from school can benefit from the experience, but then again, they don't always make allowances. I think it is good to be able to mix with people of different age groups, certainly, yes.
And do the mature students tend to stick to themselves in their own little groups or not?
No, I don't think so. In fact, I think they're, on the whole, are quite happy to mix with the younger students and probably derive some benefit from it, as indeed younger students do from meeting those who are slightly older. I think it's very much a mix. Universities are about people mixing together, really. It's not about people sort of leading separate individual lives on their own. It's very communal.
Yeah, well, good luck to Ted Goodfriend and Bernard Lewis, who are doing humanities degree in their 70s. I think it's something that we should encourage, isn't it?
I think so. It's a bit like the Open University in a way, too, getting people, because particularly the Open University, where people are usually mature anyway, because they didn't have the opportunity perhaps earlier in life to pursue a university course.
OK, well, thanks for another Young Student Report, and more next week at the same time. 16 minutes to three, and you may well remember last week we had a great computer programme, which came from Michael Gallagher, and there are some wonderful anagrams in this, and what I might do is just throw out a couple of these at you and see what you make of them. They are all members of LBC's staff, indeed on-air personalities, and there are some really nice ones here. For instance, they've all got 10 letters, incidentally, Alive Radon and Large Mind. Jot those down on a bit of paper and see if you can work out who they are. large mind, not necessarily appropriate, and a live radon. Have a think about those. No prizes, it's just for fun competition. And I'll give you the answers a little bit later on. Now, 3:15, and you'll know that we're running Young London Band 84 at the moment, which is our search for undiscovered musical talent, along with ITV's Oracle and Island Records. The closing date is September the 1st, and you have to send in a demo cassette if you are indeed a Young London Band. We've got a brief selection now of some of the tapes that arrived this week, and the first of them comes from Catherine Andrews, who's from Handcross in West Sussex. Now, I must admit, the reason I picked this out was because when we played it to the judging panel, it got a few chuckles. I'm not saying that it's necessarily lacking musically, but it's a bit of fun at the same time. Catherine Andrews singing Cuddles. Catherine Andrews, and you've got to admit, it's different. Cuddles there, a little bit of Kate Bush, I think, thrown in there somewhere. That's from Catherine Andrews from Handcross in West Sussex. And coming up, here's tape number 2. 16 years old, it's none other than Shakin' Shenley. That's the star of East Finchley, 16 years old. Shakin' Shenley is the name, well, his real name's Tony, actually, singing Tutti Frutti. And finally, and this one, I must say, did capture the imagination and taste of the judging panel, No Straight Glasses, who are a band from Shirley in Croydon, and I've had a letter here from Donna Clark, who says, No Straight Glasses are a two-piece band, Kevin Johnson, who plays keyboards, indeed all the music, and Donna Clark, who is singing. Been together for 2 years. years and have played several gigs at the Thames Poly. Both students, Kevin is at Thames Poly doing business studies, and I have just done A-levels at South Thames College. Well, let's have a listen to it. This is called Slip Away. Band is called No Straight Glasses, another to enter Young London Band 84. The closing date, September the 1st. If you'd like to send a tape in, it's Young London Band 84, LBC, Box 261, London EC4P 4LP. And if you've already sent in a tape, you might well listen out every Sunday, and more particularly Sunday week, because that is the date of the final on this programme, Sunday week. Now then, a while back, I told you about the Cockpit Theatre Summer Youth Project. It's a musical with a cast of 40 young Londoners acting, singing and dancing. And amongst them is Paul Chetcuti, who is with me now. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Tell me about the musical, first of all. It's called Homes and Gardens, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It's basically a play about a London house, and it looks at the occupants of the house from 1902, 1920... 1948 and 1984.
So the idea is to see how it changes over the generations.
Yeah, social standards and everything.
Uh-huh. Sure. And is there a particular message that comes out of that then? Is it saying something?
It's saying to be aware of what's happening around us and to look after each other, basically, I think.
Do you get a chance to decide which was the nicest generation of those four?
Personally, my own, I think.
The 1984?
1984, yeah.
Do you see a harsh side then, or are you presenting the good old days?
What, in 1984?
Well, no, in the previous generations.
I think it's a bit of both, actually. Mm-hmm. A mixture.
And where is this house?
This house is in London.
It is your average terraced house in
London? Terraced house, yeah.
OK. Now, how did you get involved in the summer project?
Well, actually, my sister was in a project before this, Homes and Gardens, and while I was up in Sheffield, she told me about it, and I came down and auditioned, and here I am.
You're from Sheffield?
Yeah, that's right.
So, what, are you spending the whole summer in London, is that
it? Yeah, that's right. Well, I just finished drama college up in Sheffield.
Right. Is it a good way to spend the summer?
Yeah, it's
Come
more...
Come on, be honest.
It's interesting. It's more experience, because, like, I've never lived in London before, and that's also another experience added to it. And, I mean, it's just really good fun being down here and actually working on a play at the same time.
Hard work, though, I should think.
Yeah, well, I mean...
I mean, it's not like the average school play. You're doing a run here of a few weeks, aren't you?
That's right, yes.
Which is going to be hard work. And one of those to join you in the hard work is Nicola, who has just got... into the studio as well. Hello, Nicola.
Hello. Got a bit lost. Sorry about that.
Everybody does. You're allowed to around here. Did Correct. You follow the signs for Dr. Johnson's house?
No, I met a lovely person, someone on the street, and they showed me around.
But eventually got you to LBC.
Yes, well.
Nicola McCrae, what do you play in the play?
I play Dorothy, mm-hmm. and I'm married to George. And
Are you George?
No, I'm not George.
Oh, right. Oh, what a shame.
Oh, thank
Beautiful
you.
Romance.
No, that's off, you know. And that's in 1902.
Ah.
I don't know if he's explained to you about the years.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
And so I'm love to George, and George is Mary's.
Well, this is, so it's really
complicated. It's really
complicated
to explain.
It sounds it must be difficult to stage, isn't it, going through these time phases?
It's an interesting way of staging it, like they segregated the stage into
four
different
sections,
lots.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
really?
You're on stage all the time. Yeah.
On the floor, so you'd be able to see.
Oh, what? So all four generations are going on at the same time?
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, it's like flashbacks.
So you're not going through it chronologically, but
no.
you dip in and out.
Interrupting, yeah.
And you're from the 1902
yes.
era.
Yes,
yeah.
And I asked Paul which he preferred, and he seemed to think that 84 would be the best lot out of those generations. How do you fancy 1902?
1902, we don't do any dancing. I don't like that. But we have to sit down. That's about a good thing about it.
Do you all sing and dance?
Yeah.
Yes.
Basically throughout the show, at one stage in the show, yeah.
Mm. And I have a little solo.
Is it a musical in the strict sense of the word, that here comes a song, or is it just a play with songs?
I think it's meant to be a musical,
yeah,
in the strict
musical.
Sense of the word, yeah.
And it
fits in.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for popping in this afternoon.
Great.
And let me just give the details of that. The Cockpit Theatre is in Gateforth Street, and it all happens Thursday the 30th of August to 15th of September. It will cost you £2.50, £1.50 for concessions. Traffic news now.
Westbound traffic on the A40 is being held up at Long Lane, Hillingdon, where the roadworks have closed a couple of lanes. Dartford Tunnel traffic remains heavy, but the tailback previously reported on the Essex side has cleared. Busy routes in Surrey and Sussex include the A3 Kingston bypass, the A24, the Worthing Road, and the A23 to Brighton, especially just south of Croydon, and, of course, further down at Hickstead. Heavy congestion has spread now from the Notting Hill area, the Carnival area, into Shepherd's Bush, so that's worth avoiding there. And we have some traffic lights out at Camden Road, the junction of Camden Park Road, Northwest 1, and there's been an accident at this junction already, so take it very cautiously. Laurie Keenan, AA Road Watch.
Countdown, we have a countdown. 10, 9, 8,
Hang on, cut.
Something wrong? That reading not good enough?
No, the reading was fine. It's just that it's not exactly the countdown we had in mind.
Now, look here, Junior. Mm-hmm. You asked me for a countdown starting at 10. Now, that's what you're getting, man.
Yes, it starts at 10, but then it goes 10, 11, 12,
1, 2, 3. Hold it. You're not talking to an amateur here. I've done countdowns at Houston, Kennedy. What kind of crazy countdown is this?
It's a Houndsditch countdown.
A Houndsditch countdown?
Yes, you see, it starts at 10 a.m. on Bank Holiday Monday at the Houndsditch in the city and the Houndsditch in Peckham, and then they count down the price of over 100 things by 10% each hour on the hour until, by 3 o'clock, anything left is sold off at
50%. 50% off?
Yes. You see, that's why when you get to 3, you don't actually say, we have liftoff, you say, we have 50% off.
Oh, I get the drift, man. That's far out.
No, actually, it's quite close. It's just by Liverpool Street Station. You just take the Circle Line, you know, or you can take the Central Line.
All right, let's just do it.
Yeah, fine.
Countdown. We have a...
Houndsditch.
Houndsditch countdown. 10, 11, 12...
1.
1, 2, 3...
We have 50% off.
50% off. We have 50% off at 3 p.m. Bank Holiday Monday.
That's it. Great, man. Fantastic.
This is Vivian White. For our bank holiday show tomorrow, we take a good look at London, the pleasures it offers and the changes it suffered. What do you think of the old place? Tell London buff Felix Barker and Margaret Norton of the London Tourist Board. Plus, the view from the left in Brighton. Union leader Ken Gill looks forward to the TUC Congress. And music critic Alan Blythe takes to our platform to protest about noise that pollutes everywhere. Join us from 10 till 1 tomorrow.
News Radio in London, 261 and VHF. This is LBC.
The 3 o'clock news, this is Greg Strange. The national dock strike has suffered a blow today, with dockers at Immingham on Humberside voting not to join the action. They're the largest group of dockers so far to have defied the national strike call, and they're being joined by their colleagues in neighbouring Grimsby. David Golley reports.
90% of the 600 men who met in Grimsby today voted to continue normal working. It's by far and away the biggest group of dockers to ignore the call for action and could have a widespread effect on the strike throughout the rest of the country. It was the use of unregistered labour at Immingham which sparked the first national action a month ago. But this time the men feel the latest strike is nothing more than offering support for the miners and that the National Dock Labour Scheme doesn't come into it. Already at Immingham, men are working normally. And in Grimsby, the ships will be dealt with as they start arriving tomorrow. The other Humber ports at Hull and Goole are still at a standstill, although passenger ferry services from Hull are operating as normal. David Golley, IRN, Humberside.
The hot weather, heavy traffic and roadworks have combined to create a large number of long delays for motorists today. The AA says traffic ground to a halt near Birmingham's Spaghetti Junction on the M6, and for the third day running there have been bottlenecks at the Dartford Tunnel linking Kent and Essex. Entertainer Mike Yarwood is resting at his Surrey home after collapsing minutes before he was due to go on stage in Felixstowe last night. He was first taken to hospital but was later released. Mr. Yarwood's been told by doctors to take a complete rest, though the nature of his illness isn't known. The leader of Israel's opposition Labour Party has been given more time to try to form a government. President Chaim Herzog has granted Shimon Peres another 21 days. Mr. Peres has vowed to continue talks with the present Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir's ruling Likud party on forming a cabinet of national unity. Rescue services in Scotland are battling this afternoon to free a 50-foot whale that's trapped on a loch after becoming entangled with a marker buoy. Ralph Blunsom reports.
The humpback whale swam into Loch Duich near the Isle of Skye yesterday evening. Local residents spotted the whale spouting water and raised the alarm. It appears a steel cable holding a buoy in place has wrapped itself around the distressed mammal's body. And two eminent marine biologists are now on the scene trying to keep the whale alive. The fishery protection vessel Jura has also been called in, as well as local fishing boats and a Navy patrol boat from a nearby torpedo testing station. People living on the Lough side say they can hear cries from the creature, which is still spouting water at irregular intervals. Ralph Blunsom, IRN, in the west of Scotland.
Europe's biggest street party is underway, with up to 500,000 people expected to cram the streets of Notting Hill in London today and tomorrow. The carnival is being organised on a budget of £100,000 and includes about 50 floats in this afternoon's procession, including one from the Metropolitan Police. The organisers and the police are confident they can crack down on the usual spate of crime. They're warning people not to carry valuables with them. Independent Radio News. At 3 minutes past three, the London weather this afternoon, a mainly sunny afternoon. There is the odd shower about, but quite warm, 77 Fahrenheit, 25 centigrade the maximum. The outlook tonight, rather cloudy, and the possibility of some thundery showers, 16 centigrade, 61 Fahrenheit. And for the bank holiday, a cloudy start, becoming brighter with sunny intervals, but also the chance of afternoon showers. You might say unsettled. LBC.
On Bank Holiday Monday, you could play blow football, nose football, real tennis, unreal tennis, water polo or underwater polo. But if you feel these just aren't cricket, remember your daily papers are available as usual.
Halt, oh alien creature on your pedal machine.
What? Who? Who's there? I can't see anyone.
Like you, I am invisible to Earth dwellers, oh cyclist.
What? I'm not invisible, and I am an Earth dweller.
You will not be for long if you ride at night without light.
Cool. He nearly had me in the ditch.
Exactly. Your next encounter may be far too close for comfort, oh dark one.
When you cycle at night, don't take unnecessary risks. Make sure your lights and reflectors are working. And don't forget, bright and reflective clothing helps both day and night. Remember, be seen and be safe.
It's 3:05. Hello, good afternoon. Time now for our 3 o'clock reviewers. We've got Dominic, Lino and Michael here with 3 new records and a new film. That's Eddie Grant singing Romancing the Stone, which, as far as I can see, has very little to do with the new film Romancing the Stone, which is all over London at the moment, Certificate PG. Dominic, Lino and Michael have been to see it, and I will come to Dominic first for some thoughts on that.
I thought it was excellent. I think one of the best things about it was the fact that there was a sort of balance with all the suspense and action. It wasn't just solid, there was a lot of humour thrown in, which is quite important because otherwise I find that I tend to lose my concentration a bit.
I haven't described the plot there deliberately because there's not a lot to talk about. if you just imagine something along the lines of, I don't know, High Road to China or Indiana Jones, it's in that sort of
When you say Indiana Jones, posters you see in the tube stations and things. Don't go by the posters because that looks like an Indiana Jones send-up, but it's not. It's, well, you could say he's the hero and she's along with him, but it's almost not exactly the same, I don't think.
I've heard people say that it's a poor man's Indiana Jones, that really it's not up to scratch.
I think that's rather unfair, really. I think it stands up on its own, you know, irrespective. I think the way it's been promoted is rather unfortunate, actually. I think it should have been promoted in a completely different way. And it probably would make more money.
Because the quotes that they're using on the posters and all that is saying, it's the adventure of the summer, hint, hint, getting back at the other one, as if there's some kind of rivalry. Did you see it in those terms, Michael?
Well, yes. It's been a big success in America, anyway.
Yes, so it has.
No, there's no reason why it shouldn't be a big success under here.
That's right.
They lap up the sort of adventure stories, anyway. Look how Star Wars was a success.
Now, the thing about Indiana Jones was that it was a send-up adventure and very much tongue-in-cheek. Do you think this was the same kind of humour, or was it
was.
Serious?
No, it was very funny. There was a couple of, especially, well, I can't give it away, but it's a very funny bit with it being chased by Mexican bandits, drug pushers. I don't know if you've seen it, and they're surrounded.
Yes.
And then he says her name and something happens, which is rather humour. And, well, yeah, it's very good.
Who stands out in it? Who of the cast were you impressed with?
Well, the heroine, which is Kathleen Turner, and she plays a successful writer called Joan Wilder, and she was very good in it.
And Michael Douglas, Douglas's son, who is in his mid-40s now, and he's playing a young, dashing hero.
Yes, and also produced the film, I might say.
Yes, that's right.
He doesn't really look as old as that, actually. No. It's quite successfully done, that, I think.
Glad to see he escaped from San Francisco at last, driving around, he found his way out.
Yes, the streets of San Francisco. And the other TV star of it is the guy, Danny DeVito, I think his name
from
is,
Taxi.
From Taxi, who plays the baddie, the buffoon of a baddie.
He's a likeable baddie. There's some very nasty baddies in it. In fact, I would like to say that I was quite surprised that the film got the certificate it did, because there's one bit at the end where a part of a body is removed by a rather nasty animal. And I was actually quite surprised that that got a PG.
I was, even the cutting of the hand.